So some years ago, it was actually in 2001, I had a sabbatical, and I decided I wanted to do something to mark the fact that I had just turned 50. You can do the math. I'm 66 soon. 68 soon. 8 soon. My wife, Nancy, is with us this morning, and she is very good at keeping me on target and reminding me of things I forget, like names. When I was thinking about what I might do, I was never athletic, and I wanted to do something harder than I had ever done before. And so I decided it would be just the thing to ride a bicycle from San Diego, California, to St. Augustine, Florida. I don't know why either. But it turned out to be a pretty amazing experience, and it taught me many, many things. I was with a group of 12 people. It's a good number, 12, you know. And we were riding our way across the southern tier in a ride that was self-contained. That means we had to pull everything with us, either in panniers on the side of our bike, or in my case, a trailer that I pulled behind my bike that had everything we would need to sleep outside, cook food, and live for the 65 days it was going to take us to cross the country. And it was that first day when we set out, those 12 of us. We were a motley crew. One of us was a recovering addict. Another was a young man who was dealing with the suicide of his father. Another was a 70-year-old woman who was still taking drugs for the cancer that she had recovered from and decided she would attempt this as well. I'll tell you about her sometime if you ask me. She was pretty amazing. And then, of course, there was a rocket scientist. We had a rocket scientist who asked to carry the tools. He always stayed at the back of the group, not because he couldn't go faster, but because he liked to take his time and appreciate what was going on around him. So he took the back, and that was always helpful because the word was that if you broke down, you didn't have to worry because there's a rocket scientist behind you. As we set out the first day, we dipped our rear wheel in the Pacific Ocean, and when you get done, you dip your front wheel in the Atlantic Ocean. And we started and went for 15 miles, about 45 miles, actually, on the flat. Easy, wonderful. We're all in great moods. And then we came to the mountain, 4,500 feet straight up to Pine Top in that last 15 miles. We got there excited, exhausted, and hungry. I think that's pretty much how it was for the disciples when they got back from their adventure. They were excited and exhausted and hungry. And there were people bustling around Jesus because he wasn't sitting around doing nothing while they were away. He was teaching, and he had all kinds of people surrounding him, and there was this crowd, and they were coming, and they were going, and they were excited, and the disciples, our passage says, did not have leisure even to eat. So he said, come on, let's go away to a quiet place to rest and to reflect. Reflection is such a powerful tool. Reflection is the tool that allows us to think about the paths that we've covered and what we've learned from those paths. And giving the disciples time to reflect gave them a chance to digest what was really going on with this person that they were now following, this Jesus. And so they entered a time of mindfulness. My hunch is it lasted only as long as they were in the boat. I suspect they grabbed a sandwich. I suspect they took some time with Jesus in the boat to talk to him and share a bit. But their time to go aside and rest turned out not to be. Because stuff happened. Stuff happened. The people saw them going and they gathered around him in the place that they had gone. See, they ran faster than the boat could row. And when Jesus saw the crowd, he had compassion on them, so he taught them. I suspect if the disciples had a bit more wisdom at that point in their journey with Jesus, they might have seen this as an opportunity. But I think instead they got hangry. You know the word hangry. You've seen it on TV enough. When you're hungry and tired, you wind up hangry. And so they turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, fix it. Fix it, leader. Send them home. Get them out there. Get them, go, get rid of them. Make them go away. There's no place to buy food here. They're going to be hungry. I think they're getting a little anxious too. You know, we got all this crowd and they're starting to trust us and we forgot to call the committee that was going to make the covered dish supper. And so what are we going to do? There's nobody. Nothing we can do. There's no food here. Jesus says, no, I'm not going to fix it. You fix it. You feed them. You give them something to eat. And they said, you want us to spend half a year's salary to go buy bread for these people. What are you thinking, Jesus? We don't have that kind of money. You wouldn't even let us take money with us when we went on our mission trip. And he says, well, go inventory your resources. Go see what you got. And so they go and look, and they come back, if we can do what preachers call conflation and bring this story in with the same story that's in another gospel. This is one of those few stories that appears in four gospels. And they said, a little boy had 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, so here they are. And Jesus says, okay, bring him to me. That next morning, when I was on this bike trip, we did wind up at the top of the hill. It was in a place called Pine Top. And in Pine Top, we all inventoried our resources. We fed each other. We bought food. There was cooking teams assigned and so forth. But after hauling all of that gear up the hill, we figured out we didn't need as much as we thought. In fact, the next morning, there was a line of 12 people, well, 11 people at the post office mailing much of their stuff back home. It turns out you really don't need anything more than one change of clothes on a bike trip. And carrying an extra chain for the length of the trip is probably not a bright idea. You have to go out and trust. So you inventory your resources and you figure it out. And there was one resource we figured we had. We had each other. The 12 of us could share the load. If one person had a spare tire and it would fit your bike, then you didn't need yours because whoever needed it first would use it and we could buy a new tire in the next town. We learned to depend on each other in that trip. The disciples find food and they bring it to Jesus and they depended on each other to provide it. And yes, Jesus did a miracle. Surely he blessed that bread and he broke it and there was plenty for all. But the truth is he knew there was plenty for all. You see, you're enough. You're enough. You've got enough. You've got enough to do the ministries that you're called to do. Enough. I came to really appreciate the rocket scientist. By the time I got to Florida, I had split a rim on the front of my bike and couldn't keep the spokes tight for anything, and I was stopping every mile and a half to 3 miles to retighten the spokes so that I could make it in, and I didn't make it in until well after dark, the place the group was staying that night. And I explained my problem, and my scientist friend said, "Kurt, go get that wheel, bring it to me." So I brought him the wheel. Well, he was also a musician. He loosened all the spokes, and then he tightened them gently, and he strummed them until he got every one at the same pitch. And when he got that done, I had a miracle. I had a wheel that I did not have to touch again for the rest of that trip, nor for the 3 years following. It worked fine because we had each other. We were enough. We had each other. So yes, with Jesus, the miracle happens. But the miracle happens inside of us when we trust enough to know that we are enough. Let it be so. Amen.